2024 will go down as one of the most successful years in the history of Springbok rugby. The world champions came into the year as the number one team. They also ended the year as number one in the world. And that came on the back of winning the Rugby Championship, the Qatar Airways Cup, the Mandela Plate, and the Freedom Cup. We also went unbeaten on an end-of-year tour for the first time since 2013. Further to that, we dominated the World Rugby Dream Team of the Year. Seven Springboks featured in that 15 that was selected by the Sports World Governing Body. And don't forget, our very own Peter Steph du Toit was named World Player of the Year. In this episode, you are going to get a front row seat to a roller coaster ride as we look back on the highs and the lows of 2024, where it all went right for the box, and maybe one or two areas of improvement, even though maybe it's just a little bit of nitpicking. Let's get started right at the beginning with the Qatar Airways Cup. I really hope it's going to become an annual thing. I think it's a nice monetary injection for the Springboks and South African rugby. It began in 2023 when we annihilated the All Blacks, famously at Twickenham, 35-7. It brought warm feelings to my heart. And we then played Wales in this year's Qatar Airways Cup match. Also at Twickenham, Peter Steph du Toit was the captain that day. We ran riot, an easy win to retain the competition. And you know what I really like about the Qatar Airways Cup? We've never lost. We are the only team in the history of the competition that is unbeaten. I just love it. Okay, Russie did select a little bit of a mix and match team for that match. And then it was on to, I suppose, if we're honest, the serious stuff. Ireland visited these shores for a two-match series. They were the only team that stopped us at the Rugby World Cup last year. Remember, they beat us in the pool stage in what was one of the most brutal matches of rugby that I can recall seeing. And it all started so well. Loftus, the first test. I just remember the crowd singing the national anthem. It was just something that brought goosebumps. It was quite incredible. The atmosphere, it's what we wanted in 2020 after we had won the Rugby World Cup in Japan the year before. But obviously COVID meant that there were no fans in the stadium. But this time we properly made up for it. And further to that, the Springboks emerged victorious as well, and we were 1-0 up in that test series. But unfortunately for us, a week later in Durban, we were beaten by a last gasp drop goal. Ireland ended up beating us by 1 point, and so we had to share that series. Next up was a one-off test against Portugal. Now, this was a celebration of rugby. We know that South Africa has a very large and prominent Portuguese community. And not only did they head on over to the stadium in Bloemfontein, but we also had fans from Portugal who traveled to South Africa for this fixture. And it was a great, great occasion. Yes, the Springboks won fairly easily, as you would expect the world champions to do against a team like Portugal, given their stage of development. But it was just really nice for us to play against an opponent like that. And there's talk of us playing against, or not even talk, it's already confirmed, we'll be playing against Georgia next year. And I really hope that this is going to become a regular thing where the Springboks play against at least one so-called Tier 2 team each year. It will help them in terms of a little bit of development, but also in terms of getting exposure and experience against top-level elite competition. But it also gives us something nice. The fans get to see a different team. It just adds something to the calendar, I think, that you don't get when you're always playing against England, Ireland, France. You know what I mean? With all due respect, I mean, obviously those are the blockbuster fixtures, but it is nice for a little bit of variety, I think. And as we saw in that Portugal match, it was indeed memorable. Now, speaking of blockbuster, the Rugby Championship then arrived, and we were looking to win this thing for the first time in 5 years, but also the first time since 2009 in a full edition of the competition, because in 19 it was shortened, as it is during Rugby World Cup years. And we started against the Wallabies in Brisbane, which, let's be honest, has been something of a graveyard for the Springboks over the years. We've only ever won there once. That was under John de Villiers in 2013. We actually smashed them 38-12. It was a blur. 33-6 eat dirt, Australia. Beautiful victory from the Springboks. In my opinion, that was our best performance of the entire year. That's the blueprint. If we do that every match, I'm going to be a very, very happy man. They're running hot. Well, I was happy anyway. A week later, we played them again, this time in Perth, in rainy, wet conditions, and we ended up winning that match 30-12. Now, I will give you a little bit of an assessment of the players and the tactics and all of that stuff a little bit later, but we're just currently going through the matches, right? And then I think the one that we were all looking forward to the most, the All Blacks at Ellis Park. They have beaten us more times than we've beaten them over the years, but there was a feeling that this time we were going to fix things. Remember, they came to South Africa as well in 2022. We smashed them in Nelspruit and then we lost at Ellis Park. There were a few reasons behind that that I'm privy to, but it's off the record stuff. And it's angering, to be perfectly honest. We should have won that second test, but okay, fine, whatever. We move on. And it wasn't looking good at one stage. New Zealand had built a lead. They were in front going into the last 12 or so minutes. But never fear, the Springbok bomb squad had come on and took care of business, and we defeated them. And you know what was the most satisfying aspect of that? Was that how many times has it happened over the years where we were leading against them going into the last 10, 15 or so minutes, and then they would score one try, two tries sometimes at the end to defeat us. Just off the top of my head while I'm recording this, this wasn't in my script, I can think of Durban 2007, they did that to us. I'm also reminded of what they did to us at Loftus in 2018 when we were winning and then they scored two tries at the end to defeat us. But this time, the shoe was on the other foot. And the tables turned again a week later in Cape Town. A magnificent occasion. I had fears before that match because one of the reasons I don't like playing the All Blacks in Cape Town is the presence of the so-called Cape Crusaders. Those Capetonians who, despite being South Africans, cheer for New Zealand. Well, you know what? A lot of people told me in the week leading up to that test that they have become a fringe group of note. In the past, there were even examples of violence that took place at the stadium. And we don't want to see that. We never want to see that. But you know what? You didn't even hear them. You didn't even see them in that stadium. That's how much Cape Town has become pro-Springbok. And I love it. In fact, so much so that I reckon we should play them every year in Cape Town now. It was a magnificent occasion. We won, and again, they were leading, and we had to come back beautiful. Two wins against the All Blacks. They were in front on both occasions, and we fought back to defeat them. It felt very, very good indeed. Then Rossi made several changes for the first test against Argentina in Santiago del Estero. And you know what? It did cost us. But only because of a last-minute penalty miss. I'm not going to mention the player's name because I'm not here to find fault with individuals or to single out people or to attack anybody. You know exactly who missed it. I know who missed it, but that's not the point of this episode. And something very, very interesting. Ireland beat us by 1 point, and it was because of a last-minute kick. Argentina beat us by 1 point, and it was because of a last-minute kick. Those are our only two defeats in 2024. We won 11 out of 13, and the two defeats, both by 1 point as a result of last-minute kicks. That shows you just how good we are and how difficult we are to beat. And of those 11 victories, the next one was against Los Pumas in Nelspruit at the Mbombela Stadium, and we annihilated them, wrapping up the Rugby Championship after having already secured the Freedom Cup and the Mandela Plate before that. We were the champions of the Rugby Championship for the first time in 5 years, and it felt really, really good. Very satisfying indeed, having all of the trophies in our cabinet at the same time. Champions of 2024. And then next up was going to be the end of year tour, where we were going to the UK. This time, Scotland, England, and Wales stood in our way. Now, admittedly, it wasn't the most difficult set of fixtures for our boys. I think if Ireland and France were on that list instead of at least Wales, we would have looked at it and gone, sheesh, this is going to be an exercise. This is going to be a proper workout. But you know what? Scotland, by most accounts, are the strongest that they've ever been in their history. Maybe the results haven't shown, i.e. getting to a Rugby World Cup semi-final like they did in 1991, but they are a strong side. And I always thought that Russie would pick a mix and match team for Scotland, our strongest team for England in the middle, and then give everyone else an opportunity against Wales. Chip over the top and Mapimpi too easy. As it turned out, the win against Scotland was pretty straightforward. They didn't score a try against us. Well, the one that they did score was illegal and rightly was ruled out. Then we beat England in what was a pretty straightforward win. I thought that England actually made so many mistakes that had they not made those mistakes, the match would have been a lot closer. Not saying they would have won, but it would have been closer. And then who knows, because suddenly things are very close going into the last 5 or 10 minutes. But it's not our problem that they made so many mistakes now, is it? Charged down by Exibet, and Smith got his mate out of jail, but then England give it away again, and this might be a try! And then we finished off against Wales, where a lot of us had a bit of a fear that maybe it was going to be a record score, it was going to be an annihilation. But you know what? Full credit to the Welsh. They're a proud rugby nation, and they never gave up. They kept fighting, and they were rewarded with a try at the end of the first half and another try at the end of the second half, and they were not embarrassed, it has to be said. And the tap and go from Visa stopped just a handful of inches short of the line. Now they drive, and there's try number four. So, where do we sit in terms of our overall assessment on the way things went in 2024? Positives? There are so many of them. When you win 11 out of 13, it's very difficult to be negative, especially when those two defeats were by just 1 point. One of the most exciting aspects for me in 2024 was seeing the Springboks show a willingness to run with the ball. There was more creativity, there was more attacking, there was more flair, and that obviously is the influence of our new attack coach, Tony Brown. In fact, it was even given a name, this new approach, Tony Ball. I thought that our scrumming was as good as ever, ox and chair. Very, very unlucky not to even be nominated for World Player of the Year. A lot of people thought that it was a disgrace that he wasn't nominated, let alone even winning the thing, which is what a lot of people thought he should have been rewarded with. But you know what? Such is life. Russie Rasmus didn't get Coach of the Year. Interestingly, that for every other category, there is a men's and a women's winner, or a 15s and a 7s winner, except for Coach of the Year. But hey, what do I know? Having said all of that, I was very, very happy with the way things went for the Springboks in terms of our overall gameplay. On the negative, I think that our lineouts weren't always as good as what they could have been. I wouldn't say that they malfunctioned, but I do think that our two hookers who played most of the time, that's Bongimbo Nambi and Malcolm Marks, I don't think that they always found their jumpers. Now, again, some of that could be because of the innovation that's taking place. It could be because we're trying new things and so on and so forth. So I'm willing to give a little bit of grace there, but I would say the lineouts were something that I wasn't 100% happy with. But again, if you think of some of the innovation that we saw, like, for example, that try that was scored against the Wallabies in Brisbane when the throw went long to the back of the lineout, and then the front of the lineout also went up, the back of the lineout threw to the front of the lineout. They formed a maul. Obviously, they pulled the Australian defence to the open side, and then suddenly the blind side opened up. And that's what created the maul and allowed them to go over for the try. It was a thing of beauty. So if we're going to see things like that, then I'm willing to give some grace in terms of line-out malfunctions slash challenges. But for me, I would say the thing that I was least happy about in 2024 was the handling errors. I thought that we committed an incredibly high amount of handling errors in 2024, and I would like to see that addressed and fixed in 2025. Now, you might ask me, who was my player of the year? I'm not going to argue with Peter Steph Du Toit, make no mistake. But I don't think he was the only one who was magnificent in 2024. Oxenchi, as we mentioned. Eben Etzebeth was a monster, as always. Cheslin Kolbe was a wonderful, wonderful player for us this year. Damien Dialende, I thought, had a great year as well. And there are so many others that we could mention. So perhaps what I would like to do instead is tell you who I think is the find of the year. And I'm going to give one forward and I'm going to give one back, okay? Because I think it's very unfair to compare a forward to a back. They're almost playing two different sports. So how, for example, how would you like to compare Oxenchi to Cheslin Kolbe? Because you might tell me, oh, Cheslin Kolbe is the best player in the world. And I would turn around and say, well, how do you think he'd scrum against Oxenchi? Valid question, don't you think? So my find of the year in the forwards is our new lock, Ruan Norkia. He came into the picture because of injury, Luit de Jager, and I thought that he acquitted himself beautifully. He grabbed his opportunity with both hands, and if he keeps up that form, he's going to put a lot of pressure on Rassie to be in the starting 15, or at least part of the bomb squad, at the World Cup in 2027 as the first or second choice lock. And maybe even, as I say, first choice. I thought Ruan Norkia, he is my find of the season in the forwards. And then you know, if you watch my content enough, you already know who my find of the year is in the back line. Sacha Feinberg Ngome Zulu. This young man showed incredible guts when he came onto the field for the first time as a Springbok, kicking a 50-meter plus penalty on his debut. Quite incredible to have done that. And then he shone for us in the Rugby Championship against the Wallabies and the All Blacks as well. And I know that some of you were not happy with him not disclosing his injury to Rassie Erasmus. I've addressed that in a previous video, and I've made my thoughts known on that. If you missed that, pretty much the crux of it is all professional athletes play with a niggle or an injury from time to time. Most of them go ahead and play through the pain barrier, and a lot of them don't disclose this to their coaches. Anyway, Joost van der Westhuizen played a Rugby World Cup semi-final with damaged knee ligaments and didn't tell his coach about it. And my point is, put yourself in Sasha's shoes. You're 22 years old. You're the new guy in the Springboks team. Your coach has backed you to start against the Wallabies and the All Blacks. Your knee is a little bit sore. What are you going to do? I can tell you with 99% certainty that most of us would have done exactly the same as Sasha. And I have no doubt that Rassie would have had a little bit of a heart-to-heart with him. And it's all water under the bridge now. And we move forward. And I have a feeling if Sasha stays injury-free, we have our 2027 and even 31 and 35 Rugby World Cup fly half already in the bag. Now, you want to know what my final report card score is for the Springboks in 2024? Well, you can't fault a team that goes 11 out of 13, the two defeats only being by 1 point owing to last minute kicks, winning every trophy that could possibly be won. And so what I'm going to do is I'm thinking just about the lineouts and the handling errors, and instead of giving an A+, I'm going to give the Springboks an A for 2024, plus it gives them something to shoot at in 2025. Go and give us an A+. Overall, I'm delighted with the way the Springboks went in 2024. They brought us so much joy, so much happiness, so much pride. And you know what? Rassie and Sia have said it before. They're pretty much the only thing that works in our country. And we just love them. And may this winning streak and this dominance continue. Keep that happy feeling going. And I will see you next time.